Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast. It's sliceoffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Teamsters, Local 695, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and Madison Firefighters, Local 311. Joining us now, the 2nd District Congressman, Mark Pocan. Congressman, how are you?
Hey, very good, Sly. Glad to be here.
Well, I would be remiss. I know this is kind of old news now, but NBC, I think, ran this second. You came right after James Comey's interview. All right, so this was a big deal.
Education Department on defense after this.
It's 272,000 kids that are affected.
An awesome organization, one that is well supported by the philanthropic sector as well.
Sure. Secretary Betsy DeVos defending a proposal to cut funding for the Special Olympics.
I have two nephews with autism. What is it that we have a problem with children who are in special education? Why are we cutting all of these programs?
We have continued to retain the funding levels for IDEA.
I believe I brought up Special Olympics.
I will address the broader question around.
Or if you could actually address the question I asked.
What mess?
People forget that you grew up in Kenosha. And that was a little Kenosha twist there. I have to believe the late Joe Andrea'd be a little proud.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it's hard with Betsy DeVos because I don't know how much she actually understands about her department or the budget. So at some point, you feel like you may be asking questions into the wind. But you know, the budget that's been introduced by Donald Trump and Betsy DeVos for the last 3 years has had big cuts to special education. From Special Olympics, like seemed to get all the attention during that part of that hearing and the media after that. But also it's you know, grants that go to special education via the states. It's funding for Gallaudet University. It's programming for hearing and visually impaired students in a number of other areas. And I just wanted an answer, you know, from her on that as well as some other issues. And don't forget, at the same time, Sly, that was a 12% across the the department budget cut. There was a 15% increase in executive pay in that in her budget. So I just wanted her to be able to contrast why she thought her executives were worth 15% more while she's slashing and zeroing out programs for kids who have special needs.
I bet you she went home and cried on her yacht all night.
Which yacht? She has like 5, I believe. Seriously.
Isn't she friends with former Speaker Jensen? I think she is.
She might be. You know, she's part of the Amway fortune. So
right.
She's built her money on a pyramid scheme, and now she's in charge of education policy for the country. How totally logical.
So the president rarely does an about-face in the sense where he looks weak, but he really looked weak on this one. He does all sorts of about-faces, but it's very rare that he sort of retrenches as quickly as he did on the funding for the Special Olympics. How about on the other issues you are asking about?
The only thing he brought up was Special Olympics, but you're right. He never admits he's wrong. And even here, he found a way to throw Betsy DeVos under the bus. I say he overruled his people, even though it's the third year in a row his budget has zeroed out Special Olympics. But we did put out a press release that I did enjoy. Our last line is someone should really grab Betsy out from under the bus. You know, he was very glad to. And then she said, oh, I'm glad he did what I've tried to convince him to do. So, you know, this is just an education department that is in disarray. She is way over her head. She should not be the education secretary. But I don't see that changing in the near future.
Well, you know, when you try to appoint Herman Cain to the Fed, you know that there might be something
wrong. Or Stephen Moore. I mean, I don't know which one is worse. Herman Cain, you know, is got no qualifications. Stephen Moore has reverse qualifications, so I don't know.
Shucky ducky. All right, so here is the president the other day talking about sanctuary cities.
You want more people in their sanctuary cities? Well, we'll give them more people. We can give them a lot. We can give them an unlimited supply. And let's see if they're so happy.
The president. All right. here's the thing. I thought the response from Democrats should have been, for the last 4 years, you've been talking about how dangerous, quote unquote, these people are, and now you're going to dump them in American cities? Doesn't that undercut his core message?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, my response was, oh, so the way to stop illegal immigration is to offer them across-the-country bus tickets? Like, that's right? What he's proposing, right?
Right.
It's crazy. But, you know, that just defines the president. Crazy. I mean, this is an idea that I doubt will ever become a reality. The problem is he, you know, withdraws his nomination for the head of ICE and kicks out his Homeland Security Secretary and some of the subordinates because he wants to just be in charge of everything himself and put acting people. You know, this is getting to a dangerous zone, Sly, whether it be the president, you know, thinking this is actually policy, or we're hearing they're gearing up to bring back family separation at the border, which I think is something that even people who are true conservatives find pretty repulsive.
Except Ron Johnson. All right, so, but is he a true conservative?
He is Ron.
He is Ron. All right, you have talked about abolishing ICE, but in this case, ICE stood up to the president. Homeland Security stood up to the president and told him this was a bad idea. They put out a statement, Homeland Security put out a statement, and then the president went around all of them and undercut him. Is ICE really the issue, or is it the president?
Well, the president's, without question, the issue. The problem is, with ICE, right now, they are operating like the president's police force rather than the agency that was created after 9/11 to stop domestic terrorism. So their primary focus is domestic terrorism. They also go after gang activity, drugs, human trafficking, in a way that so do five other agencies. The problem is, as we saw from the arrest that just happened in Wisconsin, where 83 people were arrested, about half of them had no convictions whatsoever. We were told they're going after a list of 250 people in the state that had criminal histories, and we can't even get answers from them because instead of going after domestic terrorism, they're going after people with no violations whatsoever or traffic violations. There were only a handful of people they put in a press release that were hardcore criminals, and I agree, they should be deported. But the fact that they could only mention five people out of 83 means they're putting a lot of time and money and effort into the president's focus for trying to justify a wall rather than why they were created, which is to protect this country from domestic terrorism.
The president has also, and I don't know if he's actually carried through with this or not, but threatened to cut off aid to Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador. He also ended the Obama policy, which gave people the ability, rather than making the trek through Mexico and showing up at the border, to apply for refugee status in their home countries. He ended that program. He is now cutting aid to those countries. I know this is, maybe this is an audacious question, but do you think he's deliberately trying to make the situation worse?
Well, you know, it seems like either he is completely inept or apt enough to try a few things, but not able to get them done. I mean, if you have a serious problem, and we do in three countries with violence, in some cases for different reasons, and we're not going to do anything to help relieve that violence, you're going to continue to have people fleeing that country and coming to the United States. So all the more reason there is incentive for us to provide some minimal help so that we can try to relieve either the violence or the unethical government conditions that have made it that people feel like they've had to flee a country.
Well, this is one I want to ask you because you're a little smarter than a lot of people, okay? Matter of fact, you're a lot smarter than a lot of people. I know you know that American foreign policy in Central America has had some real serious problems over the years. And also these trade agreements have had devastating effects on some of these countries. I know immigration is important. It's an important part of the United States. But isn't the best solution getting these countries stable so people can live in their own countries?
Well, absolutely, and that's the thing. In some cases, in El Salvador, for example, much of the gang activity they have was exported out of people we kicked out of L.A. decades ago. So, like, some of these things have actually even been created by us in part, which is all the more reason why if we could just help deal with those problems in those countries, people wouldn't have to flee. And also economically, as you mentioned, things like trade in other areas, if you don't have trade policies that encourage some of this, these efforts to happen, you're going to be a lot better off. And again, I think, you know, with the new NAFTA, for example, we still have some, you know, concerns and problems that have to be fixed for it to pass Congress. And, you know, all of those things have an impact, and we need the president to have a bigger global vision, especially when it comes to our southern border.
Well, I should ask you, what is the status of the new NAFTA?
Yeah, so first of all, Sly, I think, you know, from our past conversations, this won't surprise you. You know, Ambassador Froman, who was the U.S. trade rep under Obama, was awful to deal with. He truly hated the Democrats in Congress, treated us poorly, and then expected them to pass trade deals after not listening to us. The U.S. trade rep under President Trump, Ambassador Lighthizer, is actually very open to conversations. He's been in my office. We've had multiple conversations about trade. And I would argue they have marginally better labor provisions in the new NAFTA, but they're not necessarily totally enforceable because the language isn't in the agreement. It's outside the agreement. That has to get fixed. There's some laws that have to happen that I think you're going to see the Mexican government do within the next month that are necessary to make it easier to form unions.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Isn't that always the fundamental question? Is, you know, when we pass labor trade deals with these countries, if you can't form a union in those countries, it makes it very hard to have an equal playing field.
Right. But this is one that I think actually is a bar that's not that high, and I think they can do. The other problem is there's a huge giveaway to pharma in biologics, a certain type of pharmaceutical product that Canada and Mexico never asked for. We asked and put in the agreement 10-year protections for these drugs. We have 12-year protections in the United States. But by doing that, those countries now have to. That's going to keep the cost of drugs high and probably increase the cost of those drugs. And there's no reason. It wasn't asked for by Canada or Mexico. So for all the rhetoric out of this White House about caring about prescription drug prices, they didn't show it in here. So we've told the ambassador that this has to come out. There's no way that we can have that exist. And in fact, you could probably get something from Canada and Mexico for getting rid of it because we're the ones who put it in there. So there are a number of things, and there's some environmental protections and some other things that are smaller. But if you took care of the major labor provisions and this biologics, you are not that far off from having an improved, not a completely changed, but an improved NAFTA.
I want to ask you about the environmental aspect of this. You know, not taking anything away from Governor Jay Inslee of Washington State. I'm sure he was a fine congressman and a good governor, but he was a big free trader, and now he's running on global warming. I'm sorry, these trade agreements are not good for the planet's climate. I don't think you can be a big free trader and say that you're for ending global warming because, frankly, when you ship jobs to countries that don't have environmental standards, it's not like you can contain the damage in one country.
You know, exactly, and that's, you know, part of why a good trade agreement takes into consideration things like that as well. This is a marginally better. That's why we call it maybe NAFTA 2.0. That might even be generous. I might call it NAFTA 1.5. It's not what the president's explained as this complete revamp of trade in the Northern Hemisphere. But anything that's better, if it has better labor provisions that make it less likely jobs could leave, which we're trying to fight to get added, it'll be a better trade bill.
Yeah, the problem with the way we have with cars, for instance, GM just closed a bunch of plants, and they stopped making the Chevy Cruze. For people that want to buy, now look, I drive gas guzzlers, so I'm a big hypocrite when it comes to this stuff. But, you know, for people that want to drive economy cars, but they want to buy American, good luck. They don't make the economy models, the affordable models that get high gas mileage much in America. Very rarely. There's something wrong with that, Mark.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I never really seen you as a Mini Cooper sort of guy.
No. Well, first of all, that's not made by the UAW, not right. Made in America, so that ain't going to happen. Second of all, I wouldn't fit.
No. but there are many, I mean, things. You know, I grew up in Kenosha where 14,000 people used to make cars, and no one does today. There's a whole lot of other things we need to do when it comes to that front that probably the NAFTA bill alone is not going to take care of. They would argue there is some better origin of product language. I would say it's, again, marginally better. Is it game-changing? No. But it's marginally better. But at the end of the day, unless we get some of these major provisions fixed, I doubt it can pass with the number of Democratic votes it needs to when you have a Democratic majority in the House of Representatives.
All right, we'll talk more with Congressman Mark Pocan at SliceOffice.com next.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
We're back with Congressman Mark Pocan, 2nd District Congressman for the state of Wisconsin. I want to talk a little bit about the what's going on within your caucus. The media really loves to play up the differences between some of the new members and the, you know, the establishment and the people that are actually in leadership. Here's a clip of Nancy Pelosi, a couple of clips of Nancy Pelosi.
You are contending with a group in Congress. Over here on the left flank are these self-described socialists. On the right, these moderates.
Whatever orientation they came to Congress with, they know that we have to hold the center, that we have to go down the mainstream.
They know that?
They do.
But it doesn't look like that. It looks as if it's fractured. You have these wings, AOC and her group on one side.
It's like five people.
No, it's the progressive group. It's more than five.
I'm a progressive, yeah.
When we won this election, it wasn't in districts like mine or Alexandria's. However, she's a wonderful member of Congress. I think all of our colleagues will attest. But those are districts that are solidly Democratic. This glass of water would win with a D next to its name. But the 43 districts, we won 43, net gain of 40, were right down the middle. Mainstream, hold the center victories. And if we're going to be helping the one in five children in America who goes to street sweep hungry at night, who lives in poverty in our country, we have to win.
What do you think of that response?
Oh,
yeah, so Sly, I look at it at a 30,000-foot level in this way. The media loves to say there's disarray within any party, right? The Tea Party certainly was disarray in the Republican Party. In our case, you know, the first bill we passed, H.R. 1, was a comprehensive bill that dealt with campaign finance, election ethics reform. Every single Democrat voted for it. Every single Democrat was a sponsor of it. We've passed two bills on gun violence prevention. We've passed a bill on paycheck equity for equal pay for women. We are going to be passing a bill on infrastructure with, I would guess, every Democrat support, as well as a bill on prescription drugs, trying to lower the prices. In many ways, we are working together, rowing together. What we're really experiencing is what I call an era of a celebrity politician. I mean, when someone can come to Congress and have 3.9 million Twitter followers, double what Nancy Pelosi has built over decades, it's a different phenomena. And I think reporters want to think there's division. I just think there are a few folks that are talking about some issues they would love to see us address. But the bottom line is that the issues that we ran on in November and we're putting on the floor of the House of Representatives are passing with great support and with really unanimous votes and even sponsorships, which is like even a stronger sign than just a vote. So I think much of this hype has been overblown.
Well, and a political party has to be diverse. I mean, there's a place for Conor Lamb, and there's a place for AOC.
Yeah, and what's interesting is there is complete overlap between those two when it comes to a lot of labor issues.
Right.
You know, so...
He seems very impressive to me, by the way.
He is. He's very smart. You know, he's a lawyer by trade. He actually has a bill that we wanted to introduce, and we found out he already beat us to it, which was dealing with the tax provisions that affect people who work in the building trades. You know, part of the changes in the Republican tax bill took away the ability to deduct your tools, your travel for work, your union dues, and, you know, many people wound up with tax increases because of it, and we wanted to introduce something. We found out Connor already had the bill, so we joined him in that effort. So he really gets his constituents.
Let me ask you about the whole notion of, you know, the Congressional Campaign Committee cutting off consultants that take business from challengers within a Democratic primary. That doesn't seem, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the name of the party the Democratic Party?
Yeah, I think I was the second person to speak out publicly against this, and getting a little pushback from some in Washington for it. But, you know, I think if you can't stop a primary by extortion, and you can't act like a monopoly when we're the party that's trying to break up monopolies, and that's exactly what we're doing. When the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee means so much money for the consultant side of the business that they can blackball you for daring to work for a challenger, that seems undemocratic with a small d. It seems counterproductive, and I think ultimately it costs the campaign committee a lot of small-dollar donations because people find that to be something that doesn't smell right.
Well, the person that heads up that committee is in a neighboring congressional district in Northwest Illinois. I know you've worked with her on other issues, and Sherry Bustos is very good on trade and obviously a very popular elected official in her district. Have you talked to her about it?
Yes. No, actually, I have on several occasions. And she doesn't really want to change her mind. I think, unfortunately, some of the people who opposed it decided to, rather than keep the conversation in the family, which I think would have been the smarter way to try to deal with it, went very public, and that might have made her dig her heels in a little more, and I don't know if that's helpful. End of the day, I mean, the DCCC is doing many good things. For the first time ever, they have 60 people already out in the field helping to keep our majority and grow it. They just opened an office in Texas because there's a lot of opportunities for pickups down there. Let's have them focus on that rather than something as misguided as this was. This was a self-inflicted wound they didn't need.
Let me ask you about something that you're working with Senator Sanders on. You know, ever since Taft-Hartley passed, obviously that was a big blow to labor. How can we make it easier to organize and for people to have representation?
Well, there's going to be a bill coming out that will do a lot of that. Bernie Sanders and I have a bill that would do even more, the Workplace Democracy Act. But there's going to be another piece of legislation that I'm not sure if it's been formally introduced yet that will go towards fixing a lot of the labor law that we need to in this country. I think the AFL is looking at four major provisions this year they want to see happen that would help working people across the country the most. One is deal with the trade policies, and that's going to be dealing with NAFTA first and foremost. Second is dealing with the minimum wage because that helps to adjust the floor for people's wages. Third, it's dealing with this bill to try to make it so that we can allow people to have a workplace voice across the country. And then fourth is investing in our infrastructure because that'll help create lots of good-paying, family-supporting jobs. So that's, I think, what we're going to be talking to many folks in labor across the country in the next 2 years, because if we can get any of those measures addressed, we will make the conditions for working people a lot better.
Shouldn't the presidential candidates be asked about these bills?
Absolutely. In fact, if anyone doesn't come up with support for at least $1 trillion investment in our infrastructure for making it much easier for people to be able to organize and have a voice in their workplace, for supporting a minimum wage increase to $15 by 2024, like the legislation we've introduced does, and a real place on NAFTA that doesn't just support pharma and make it easier to export jobs, but actually protects jobs here. Those should be four cornerstones of any campaign.
Well, if a Democratic president is elected, let us not repeat the mistake that was made in the Obama administration in that he promised to support the Employee Free Choice Act and then didn't do anything about it, didn't push for it, didn't make it a priority. And Presidents Carter and Clinton had the votes at one time to get rid of Taft-Hartley, and they didn't make it a priority.
No,
and
you're right.
Let's get a president that makes it a priority, and people view it as left or right. It isn't left. It's a matter of fundamental fairness.
Well, especially at a time of having greater and greater disparities in income, at a time that we all just paid our taxes recently, and the fact that we were all promised, don't forget, by President Trump and Paul Ryan, a $4,000 pay increase because of their tax bill. Not only did people not get that pay increase, they also didn't get it via their refund. We know that 83% of that money in 8 more years goes to the top 1%. People need to remember that as well.
I see that Paul Ryan's going to be teaching a little bit at Notre Dame.
I wonder if he's going to teach how to operate without a spine and other amoeba creatures.
You know, maybe we should get the nuns on a bus to enroll in his class, huh?
Oh, Sister Simone, I love her. Yes, they should.
Speaking of South Bend, Pete Buttigieg, your thoughts?
I'll tell you, there's like, 18 candidates right now. We're up to 20. He's having a moment right now, and I think part of it is he's being pretty authentic in how he's presenting himself, and that's great, the fact that he's openly gay, and that's not an issue. I find awesome that we're finally at that point in society. But honestly, I care about a lot of issues from, Medicare for All to investing in infrastructure to debt-free college and investing in apprenticeships. I want to see candidates talk about all those, and I'm kind of waiting to see which candidates rise to that challenge.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, but, in order to get people to pay attention to those issues, you've got to have somebody that can keep people's attention.
Right.
And I notice he has that skill. He has that skill where he gets people to actually listen to what he's saying, and, we'll see what develops out of that, but I find him to be one of the more fascinating candidates that's running.
Yeah, I think he's exceeded people's expectations. I think Beto O'Rourke is an interesting candidate in that, he was in my class. He is truly one of the nicest people you could ever encounter. And he's kind of going a different route. He's not talking about every individual issue, like maybe Elizabeth Warren has a new policy on a real regular basis. But he's talking on that bigger inspirational level, and I think that's attracting some people. I think all these different campaign styles, we'll see what happens in the next year and what the American people think is the greatest contrast to Donald Trump. And I'm looking forward to seeing what we whittle down to.
Can we go back to a day, though? I mean, everybody likes Joe Biden. But when it comes to voting for the bankruptcy bill and all the bad trade deals, voting for the Iraq war, can we go back to that?
I think people are going to be desperate for a big shift after we get rid of Donald Trump, and that gives us some big opportunities, which is all the more important who we put in charge, who is in the White House and leads with those priorities is going to really matter. So, if we take someone who just kind of comes out kind of mamby-pamby centrist, doesn't really say much, but tries to run on some other ways of running, I'm a little nervous what that could mean. So I do think we do have to have some minimum standards of issues that we all have to come out of in the next year.
Well, everybody talks about experience, and he does have experience, and he's done a lot of things right, but frankly, he's gotten a lot of things wrong over the years. And I don't think it's a matter of left or right. It's a matter of and this is one thing Buttigieg points out. It's like, not everything was fine before Donald Trump became president, and let's not make 2016 and how the economy was operating our default setting.
Right. No, and that is very true. In fact, you'd think by more standards, the fact that the economy has continued to progress is something that should be good for Donald Trump, but it's everything else that people don't like about him. So that might be the contrast people are looking for, and who best exemplifies that may be in the best shape.
Congressman, thank you for coming on the show today. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you, Sly, as always.
Continued having fun, and we do look forward to your next cage match with Betsy DeVos.
Oh, hopefully another secretary.
All right. Thanks for coming on, Mark.
Thank you.
All right. Congressman Mark Pocan with us at SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.